You are listening to Prometheus by Minute. I'm your host, Connor Coulson. This is Minute 50. This minute opens with David speaking to Wayland via Neurovisor, and ends with Vickers throwing David up against a wall, saying, "So help me God, I will find the cord that makes you run, and I will cut it." We only see the conversation with Wayland from David's side. Most of it is meaningless, but then he says, fortunately slightly premature. What does this refer to? It always stood out to me, because it's seemingly referring to something specific, though I can't imagine what. If you look closely, you'll see that David is wearing latex gloves. Are these the same ones he's wearing in the lab? It is implied that very little time has passed between that scene and this one. However, he also went to the trouble of putting on his green field jacket. This implied chain of events makes no sense. It would have been more logical to have him still wearing the lab coat, or simply in the grey t-shirt he wears beneath it. This way you know that he went immediately from the lab to report to Wayland. He was in so much of a hurry he didn't even dispose of his gloves. When did he have time to return to his quarters to put on a jacket? Does he even have quarters, or is it a broom closet? Why did he even need the jacket in that particular moment? I mean, technically he doesn't need jackets or clothing for that matter, but I accept that he has a certain uniform or dress code to adhere to. Okay, so is this implying that he had to get dressed up for Wayland's sake? Alright, I could buy that. But that still brings us back to the gloves. If we're following this chain of logic, these are new gloves that he's wearing to talk to Wayland. Does this environment need to be kept especially hygienic? Well, Wayland is in a cryopod, but it might be a concern when he's awoken. That said, David is an android, he's as germ-free as they come. I can come to no sensible conclusion. As much as I love the field jacket, I think it should have been used only in the upcoming scene with Holloway. That would have helped to convey a sense of time passing, and ties into my theory of David selecting garments based on the rest of the crew. Holloway is in a jacket, it must be cold, therefore David will also choose to wear a jacket. I feel like maybe we're missing something that may have been lost in the edit, or maybe it was a simple oversight, though the crew on this film have thus far proven themselves to have a great attention to detail. David concludes his report to Wayland, and removes the neurovisor in such a slow, methodical way, with a determined expression on his face, as if this action carried much more importance than we would otherwise assume. He then exits down a corridor, and we watch as the colour scheme goes from warm yellows and greens to a cold blue. We could read this as David navigating from a place of safety and control to an environment where he is vulnerable. David moves in a way that is uncharacteristic for him. He walks fast but with less precision. He swings his arms, his posture less restrained. He even throws off his gloves and merely dumps them on a device in the corridor. He looks as if he's about to charge into battle. Was all of this implying that he sensed Vickers before he even left the cryo room? And yet he resumes his usual mannerisms once he finds Vickers. She is just standing in the corner, still and stiff like a robot. How long was she standing there? Could she hear any of the conversation? This is the first time we see her navy blue bodysuit. It's unusual even amongst a cast already wearing very diverse clothing. This isn't part of the EVA suit, though it looks technical. But it is seemingly just what she chooses to wear when not on duty. I love the addition of the UGG boots. That was such a trend at the time. They look so strange and heavy against the skin-tight bodysuit. It is another example of her wardrobe being inhumanly perfect. It's never about comfort or practicality for her. Well, other than the UGG boots. It's interesting to note that you have David wearing thongs or sandals, which is very casual and very Australian. And then you've got Vickers in, again, very casual, very Australian footwear, just the opposite season. I don't know why that happened, but guess it's a good promotion for the Australian footwear industry? Meredith is already simmering with rage before David even appears. This is Charlize's strong suit. She is just so good at intensity. She throws David against the wall with ease, and you really believe she could do it. I'm not sure how much an android would weigh or how much resistance they would give, but it's convincing either way. I gather she's pretty pissed off that Wayland elects to communicate with David and not her, even though she far outranks him, and she worked hard to get where she is, dammit. As I've mentioned before, I imagine this rivalry dates back quite far. She's very familiar with David, and this conflict is old by now. But, evidently no less intense. Vickers is even outranked by Sherwood Holloway to a certain degree, as Wayland gives them more authority over the mission than her. She has dedicated years of her life and energy to the company, only to be little more than a figurehead on this mission. I wouldn't say she was a figurehead back on Earth. It seems like she is used to being in charge, and she can't handle this sudden lack of power. Now to some excerpts from the scripts. In Alien Engineers, during the head explosion scene, David watches through the window, almost amused, and he says, "Mortal, after all." So we have the same phrase found in every script. In this script, and it makes sense for where the character goes in Engineers, he's not personally bothered by this revelation. He's, as it says, amused, he's aloof, he's indifferent, he thinks this is all beneath him. And in this scene, they also discuss the pyramids in a more direct way. Watts/Shaw says, "24 pyramids scattered around the moon's equator, massive power supplies, vents in the walls, atmosphere changes, breeder tanks." She's got it. "The pyramids are terraforming machines." And then Holloway says, "That's why Earth's ancient cultures built pyramids, in imitation of the gods. 12,000 years ago, beings from the sky set pyramids on the Earth and transformed the world. That's what they were doing here, before their civilization failed." Watts says, "It didn't fail, it was wiped out." So we have that ancient collective memory implied again, which in a previous episode, Phil and I talked about how the engineers are a kind of collective memory that we keep depicting them in art, not realizing that's what we're doing. So yeah, I kind of like the idea that humans encountered these pyramids, not really understanding what they were for, and replicated them or even maybe moved into the original ones. And then we have this mystery of who or what wiped them out. Another moment worth noting is this, it's ridiculous. So Shaw is putting this seed probe through the optical nerve to see basically what the engineer sees. The seed probe reaches the optic nerve of the exposed eye, and its POV fills with a vision of glory. A beautiful woman's face surrounded by a nimbus of light. An angel. Glass and Holloway gasp. The woman in the blurry vision is Watts, as seen by the dead engineer's eye. I know I've mentioned it before, but the way Shaw is depicted in both of these scripts is laughable. Like, calm down, guys. She's just a human woman. Steady on. And here is a sadly never filmed scene from the Paradise script. Exterior, pastoral beach, day, a white sky, blindingly so, tilting down to find water, azure blue, striking, waves roll gently onto the beach as a pair of work boots splash through the surf. It's David, in his jumpsuit and sunglasses. Wait, where the hell are we right now? But now our attention goes to a sound, a revving motor. David looks out at the water as a wave runner zips across the ocean, blasting towards the shore, cuts to a sudden stop revealing its driver, a stunning woman in an equally stunning bikini. She smiles at David, everything about her just oozes sex. Yeah, remember what I was saying about how women are depicted in these scripts? Okay. The woman is not given a name, she is simply referred to as Bikini. "Hi," she says. "Hello," David says. "You here to see him?" "Him? Who? What the hell is this?" But David nods. "I am." A seductive grin as the woman nods to behind her. "Then hop on." By the way, I really would love to see David in sunglasses. I want to know what kind he would wear. I feel he's kind of a wayfarer kind of guy, but who can say what sunglasses they wear in the future? Or why an android would need sunglasses? They're trendy, damn it. They look cool. That's the only reason you need. Rule of cool. David nods, splashing knee-deep into the water as we cut to exterior, azure sea, day, moving. The wave runner jams across the water. A surreal sight. David in his jumpsuit, arms are wrapped around the glorious bare midriff of the woman, dropping behind them to find they're approaching a magnificent yacht. And we cut to exterior, yacht, day. David climbs up a ladder, steps onto the deck of the yacht, walks along it until he reaches a cabana. Five beautiful and scantily clad women, all but feeding grapes to a handsome man, virile, mid-30s, oddly familiar. He looks over as David approaches, sighs theatrically. And so the dream comes to an end. And while we're not exactly sure what this man is talking about, David sure does. He smiles. Hello, Mr. Wayland. Oh, that's why he's familiar. This is the old man, Wayland, except he's about 60 years younger. How that is, we'll figure out later, but for now, I love the way Lindelof writes his scripts. Very conversational, very animated. I love it. Wayland, I gather you've come to take me back? David, no, sir, not yet. A beat. Disappointment in Wayland's eyes. Maybe that's what he's saying slightly premature to in the final film. I wonder if they were really keeping this in mind when they filmed it. I digress. Wayland, then why are you here, David? David, I'm here to tell you that things haven't exactly turned out the way we'd hoped, sir. Wayland absorbs that, just looks at David. This is a man who gets what he wants, always. Anger now. You were instructed not to disturb me unless you had what I came for. You useless shit.
Yes, swearing Wayland's great.
David hesitates. Did the insult actually affect him? Nah, he's just a robot, right? David, what you came for isn't here, Mr. Wayland. At least not in the way you had hoped. So I've been forced to, how to put this? Experiment. And Jesus, we can't help but think David just may be talking about Holloway. This happens after the drinks poisoning scene. Wayland smiles at his man-made son like a proud father. That's what I love about you, David. Never say die. Now Wayland steps forward, puts his hand on David's shoulder. Not without affection. We finally see the old soul in this young body, and it seems scared. Once I leave this place, I won't have much time. A beat, measured. Don't come back here until you've found what I need. David nods, ever the dutiful soldier. And as he reaches for his sunglasses and lowers them, smash cut to interior, dark room, Magellan, night. David removes his helmet. He sits in a dark room, the only illumination coming from the blinking panel just in front of him. The panel he just jacked into. If we look closely at it, and we probably won't, we might just see flashing biorhythms. And as our minds desperately try to figure out just what in God's name all this means, we mercifully cut to Shaw's quarters. So that's another scene. But I love this scene so much. I really, really wish it had been in the final film. We've got David in sunglasses. We've got, you know, a beautiful beach. We've got Wayland swearing up a storm. We've got kind of a father-son moment there. And that's really integral, I think. The other stuff, that's fun. But actually seeing a relationship between David and Wayland, obviously that's always something I'm very fascinated by. And here, there's a lot to be analyzed and interpreted and dissected, and the implication here being that David poisons Holloway of his own accord. He's not being instructed. The order of events is flipped in the film, meaning that David is merely following instructions, and that changes so much about David's motivation and his perhaps innocence, at least in Prometheus. And of course, this is the scene that would have justified
casting Guy Pearce and putting him in the old man makeup. I think it is a real shame that it just never... It's not even a deleted scene. It never got that far in production. And I, for one, think that's a real shame. By the way, both of those script excerpts came from pages 51 to 53 in both of the scripts. So it is very strange that they line up like this. Alright, that about covers it. This is Coulson signing off. You can find me on traviandesigns.com, TRAVIAN, or Prometheus by Minute on Facebook.